It's time for the Haddit.com radio show. Haddit.com radio is an in-depth look at all things VA. If you need help with the VA, log on to Haddit.com. Now, here's your host, Gerald Cook.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, on this second day of June. Yeah, 2016. My God, where's this year went? But anyway, we're here with our co-host Jay Basser and Alex Graham's in here with us, and we have someone else here, 859.
Berta.
I'm sorry, Berta. I don't know your number.
Yeah. Hi, Alex. Hi, John. Hi, Gerald.
And Berta snuck
well,
in.
You're the one that always calls me.
Oh yeah, right.
but anyway, we're going to talk about some DBQs and IMOs and IMEs. By golly, I learned a few things here. You think you know everything, but I guess you never do.
Oh, no.
I don't anyway, and I'm first one to admit it.
Gerald, can we talk about the latest?
Oh, yeah,
AI,
go ahead. Go ahead, Murda.
Oh,
ahead.
Well, we could talk about it at the end of the show.
The TBI, that's real important.
Yes, it was a press release yesterday. Buck posted it. Today, at Haddit, and basically what the secretary claims they did is that they granted equitable relief to more than 24,000 veterans following a national review of their TBI, medical exams. Those were exams processed between 2007 and 2015, and it was conducted because they found out, and a lot of this had to do with work that Ben Krause did, if you're familiar with him. He's a lawyer. They found that the CNPs were being done by non-qualified medical people at the VA. Well, we never get qualified people. I mean, you know, we could have told the secretary that ourselves. But he did extend equitable relief to 24,000 veterans who it seems that they've already reviewed. Now, it seems to me the VA should have told them they were being reviewed because yesterday, at the same time, we got a new member at Haddit who was at 80% reduced, or was it 70% reduced to 60 because they said that they had made a queue in his exam regarding part of his residuals for TBI. So, there's been talk here. I think he has a hearing loss claim in progress. Vertigo and even many heirs disease can be caused by hearing loss. So he might have a way to recover that money. However, what I first thought was whoop-de-doo for TBI veterans who already got screwed might be, oh, no, they found out a different way to screw them because they might reduce some of them because of the review. I mean, I don't trust them, you know.
I don't trust them, maybe.
Oh, my. Oh,
yeah.
Man, sorry, Buck.
Left? Are you?
Well, gee, I raved all day to Gerald when he called me about the VA. I've been dealing with them for over 30 years, and I've never seen them as bad as they are these days. They've never been this bad.
Well, that you're talking about that they were reducing, I think they were peeling off at 30% on a queue because they were saying the vertigo was doing a pyramiding on top of a TBI rating they were giving him already.
Did you see the note I left? Yeah, but I didn't decipher it yet, Alex.
Well, think of it like this. You know how hard it is for you and me to file a queue against the VA.
Right.
You know that the chances of winning that are about, like, I'd say 0.00001% at the outset, even on appeal, you'll lose it, and you might get it remanded for them to give you another brand-new screw-in at the BVA a third time. But
yeah,
you probably
well,
won't win it, or if you do, you will finally win it on reversal at the CABC, where they finally say, you know, we got to call you on this one. I'm sorry. But,
yeah, well...
Take that rating back and says we're queuing ourselves. A shoe is on the other foot, and they have to wear it. And if it don't fit, then that's it. And you can't take that money away from them. You got to prove.
No.
Oh man, you got to prove that it was a outcome determinative error. I don't think you can meet that high standard to take that back. What if the Raiders said, "Well, he has labyrinthitis in his ear." That's a separate ear thing. 4.85 or 8.7 in hearing has nothing to do with TBI, really.
Well, right. That's why I'm hoping that he can get the vertigo connected to the hearing loss claim that's still pending.
Right.
So that would screw them because they tried to screw him. But they did correctly say that he doesn't owe them any money because they admitted that it was their error. But that's not the point.
That's not the point. But you can't take the regulation, which is pyramiding, or 0.14, and use that as the reason for your cue. That would be the result of the cue, not the cause of the cue. So you get the cart before the horse there. The horse has to turn around to get the carrot. And he can't just do it that way. You got to have a simple error compounded itself with interest, and everyone could see it. Nobody could see into the mind of what the Raider was thinking when he gave him that 30%. How you're going to change that with the evidence, you can't reread the evidence because we all know you can't do Q on the way the evidence was interpreted. But VA's trying to do, I don't think you can meet that.
But the press release from the secretary, please. That these veterans would be entitled to a new CMT exam. So that tells me that whether he had a bogus exam by an unqualified doctor in the first place or not, I feel he should have been entitled to a new CMT exam.
Of course.
Maybe they gave him one, but I didn't pick that up from his message at all.
Oh, I don't know how many guys I've dealt with where we've figured out finally that the Raider, the VA examiner, the person who was making the big cheese decision on the thing and looking at all the medical evidence, was a proctologist looking at x-rays of somebody's back. Analyzing PTSD. I mean, this is the kind of crap VA pulls. You know, they just grab something out of the guy mopping down the floor in the restroom strip. Hang on.
Well, the last
and
time
sit there and ask these questions to this guy.
Well, the last Q they tried to deny on me, I asked them to Q themselves on it, and I won, and they reversed it within days. But I still believe it was the same guy that had medical review that fills their water cup, the paper cup dispenser for their water cooler. It was written by a medical idiot. But then again, hey, for all I know, maybe it was a real VA doctor because there's more to it than that. And, of course, there's a lot on the Toma situation, too, that's hitting the crap is hitting the fan on Toma. I won't even bring it up because it's just too ridiculous. And I'll get you angry. It was the case of the Beam family you're probably familiar with. He was one of the vets they killed at Toma. And the Office of the Inspector General literally abused the family members because they kept pushing the Inspector General to look into it. And VA is very abusive, let's face it. I mean, they treated me like Dirk when I went after them for killing my husband. But, you know, the funny thing is, I didn't have any problems with the general counsel because they can read. They could read the evidence I prepared. I took them step by step. This is what they did, and this is how they killed him. It took them about 6 or 7 years. And one VA tried to cover up what the other one did. I didn't have any problems with general counsel I don't know why these families even had to deal with the Inspector General, because they don't have any pull. I mean, they're not a, that's not an FTCA case. That's not filing 1151. They're just giving recommendations and, you know, things that they found in the review of TOMA. But there's still a lot of crap here. It's 200 pages of that document that they just released on the hearing they had the other day. Have you read that, Alex?
If you're talking about the thing that Ben Krause pulled up, having the PTSD or the TBI exam, is that what we're still talking about?
No, for some reason I switched over to the other thing that he's been talking about. maybe I shouldn't have done that. It's just the malpractice that goes on at the VA. It just irritates me because I'm talking about two different things. You know why? Because I'm so angry. I could gripe all day and all night about the VA, but it'll all be in my book. My daughter's been on me for 2 years now. Mommy, write the book. Write the
oh,
book.
Man.
Got, yeah.
In a New York minute.
And in the book, I'm going to have all the documentation from the VA, the medical records and everything, because I don't want them to keep killing our vets, Alex. And they're going to do that.
That's what I'm doing on the second book I'm writing. I think I'm going to just launch it from the house on PDF format, or even print them up if people actually want to see it on paper in an analog thing, and they can sign up for the whole book or for the first 10 chapters or a chapter that specifies what they're interested in, so they can focus on Q or earlier effective dates, and they don't have to buy how to put a claim together from chapter 1 to 10.
Well, that's a good idea. We have a widow who just wrote a book, and she mentioned it on Amazon. Then she wrote a book about her husband. And to me, it is probably a lovely memorial to her husband. And I'm sure he's very proud of her, but he's dead. And her children will be proud of her, because all of our veterans have to be memorialized for our kids and our grandchildren. But the book I'm going to write, I'm not going to memorialize my husband. I'm going to tell everybody what VA did, step by step, to kill him. And at one point, I considered it murder when they were covering it all up. You know, if we don't find out these things, they just sort of put it under the carpet. But I'm jumping around here, but you guys better get back to UGC, because I'm already mad about all that crap. UGC. I mean,
we didn't mean for you to get upset, Berta.
Oh,
do you need a Valium
okay.
or something?
Oh, gosh, no, I am drug and alcohol free.
The San Antonio, Berta, because for next spring for the NOVA conference, because I'm sure Chris Adding and Ben will be there, and he'll probably haul his wife Gretchen down there, but she'll have a brand new baby then. I think they're expecting in October, if I remember what Ben said in Irish.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
They've dialed back their life quite a bit. That's probably what gives them all the extra to write more frequently now.
Well, he did snag
a good remand out of the Court of Veterans Appeals for Yvette a couple of weeks back. So Bob Walsh told me about that. Said he fought the good fight, but you know he's got TBI. That's why he's so interested in that, and not PTSD, but TBI from an IED or short round or something.
Wow.
So
Bob
you know,
Walsh.
No, Ben Krause.
Ben? Oh, Ben, yeah. And he
made
a lot of mistakes.
Hey, and Gretchen, man, they're a pair to draw to. They're just like peas and carrots. They're the nicest folks I've ever met. But, you know, they're from Minnesota, and they don't even have any accent.
Huh.
Don't sound like they rolled in from Norway.
Yeah, he's done a lot. He's done a lot for veterans, Alex, and he admitted long ago that he made a lot of mistakes with his claims when he started out. And it just goes to show, even if you're a lawyer, this stuff is overwhelming. You know, you've actually got to know 38 in and out, you know, and And like Gerald and I were talking, like Gerald said, how many disabled vets can really handle all that? They can't.
They can't.
You're
right.
You know, they can't. It's overwhelming. But
well,
let's talk about those the so-called VA doctors that do the QTC exams.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
A couple of them, they're pretty nice guys. I mean, they just read down that DBQ just like from A, you know, number one to number six. They do write the answers down. They kind of flesh it out a little bit. Tell me about it. And I was standing behind Butch Long when I was sitting there in the corner. And I said, "Well, oh come on, Butch, tell them about when they came through the wire, how they overran your position down there." And he goes, "Well, the judge, so he don't want to hear about that." And I said, "Well, sure he does. How many of them did you kill before they got you?"
Yeah,
boy.
And you know that old psychiatrist is over there just writing like a son of a bitch. But he got 50% right out of the box, so I guess we said the right thing.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah,
don't ever let
anybody tell you, well, you can't go in there with the psychiatrist. Hell, I was pushing his wheelchair. Nobody's going to cut me off at the pass.
Well, I'm still trying to figure out how the David gynecologist didn't stand for a guy with, I think, a leg injury or a different situation. A gynecologist. You know, this stuff is bizarre. We couldn't make it up, Alan.
You know what's really...
And,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I said to my daughter 3 years ago, Frances, who is going to read a book about disabled vets? Our nation does not really give a damn about them unless they have a disabled vet in the family. And that doesn't always mean care for the disabled vet in the family either. And I said, nobody will believe what happened to Dad. Nobody will believe it. She said, Mom, let's will believe it. You know, and I started thinking about that. And, yeah, she's right. And, you know, none of us are going to become millionaires selling books to veterans. I told my daughter, I said, don't be thinking in terms of your inheritance from the proceeds of a book, because, believe me, it's not that way. You know, we're in a very small club of people that really care. You know, but like she said, if that helps one veteran look at the medical records and start asking questions of their doctor, questions that might save their life, she said, then it's worth it, isn't it? And I said, yeah, you bet. You bet. But then again, you should see some of the CMP they did on my husband in a posthumous way. Mm-hmm. They were absolutely outrageous and abusive, the same term that Ben Crouch used regarding was it Thomas Beer that was mentioned in the article, died? I'm probably saying his last name wrong. Was B-A-E-R. His daughter came to Ben's site today to write about it. But, boy. I can't believe you guys signed up for all this crap.
Well, you know what? When I realized that Vietnam was going to be the last war that I was going to be the right age to get into, and that there was going to be a lot of fun about 45 or 50 years down the road, and veterans would be respected finally, I decided maybe I wanted to sign up and be in that war just to see what it was like. Well, everybody in my family's been in a war. It just seemed like it wasn't natural for me not to be in one.
Yeah.
The call of the wild of that sandbox in Southeast Asia was pretty strong for me, anyway. I was a military brat, Bert. My dad was a colonel when I went. No, he was a brigadier general when I went in the service, I think.
Wow.
He's Major General. That's right. Excuse me. I take that back. He's Vice Commander of Tactical Air Force under Mike Mohmeyer, I think, when I joined the service.
Yeah.
And
wow.
I was jump ahead of the law when I did it, too.
Wow, boy.
I got arrested for drunken driving and reckless driving and breach of peace and a few other things, and my draft number was 39. My dad says, you screwed up, son. I'm not paying for your college this fall. And I said, you could sign up. I might help you get into the Air Force instead of the Army. I went, okay, that sounds cool. So I traded that. I went in front of the judge for my hearing, and I says, I'm giving up the right to go to college, Your Honor. I'm going to enlist in the Air Force if you'll just reduce that felony to breach of peace. And he says, okay, son, when you show me your AFES registration, and I'll sign off on it.
No so, kidding.
Yeah, that's how I ended up in the service. It was strong push from the judge and the judiciary for screwing up 4 days after I graduated. But still, the allure of Southeast Asia and Vietnam, to me, it didn't find it to be something to be afraid of so much as I thought of it as being a great big adventure. It sure was. God, boy, howdy was it.
An adventure. You know what? I think it'd be great.
Well, it wasn't bulletproof.
I think it would be great if our Vietnam vets, Gerald, would be willing to join us all in a show sometime on Vietnam and on some of the funny stuff that happened there.
Funny stuff happened. Some of the stories I've heard.
Yeah.
We had some Vietnamese who were flying with us up there in Laos, and they always kept a little silk sack with rice kernels, and they always flew with the banana. And they said, you know, if I get killed, take this banana and put it on my chest and put some rice kernels in my mouth to keep the celestial dog from consuming my, you know, the sweetmeats in my belly. That's the religious belief they have.
Wow.
Right after they die, so you got to protect them with food. And
make sure
you put that rice in my mouth, you guys. Remember that. It's okay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's all kinds of funny stories about that.
They did some pretty rough stuff, too. I saw a documentary a few times. I sit there and cry when I watch it. It was true. It was a documentary. This guy, had killed a young Vietnamese man and took a picture out of this Vietnamese man's pocket from the body and kept it and always wondered about it. And he did a lot of research and, he finally found the guy had a daughter and he found the daughter and he went back. Well, he started writing to her. And he went back and finally met her in person. And they showed her coming around the corner, and he had a great big bouquet of flowers for her. And he went to hand them to her, and she simply threw her arms around him and broke down in tears because the Vietnamese, of course, feel that he killed her father, but he was the last person with her father when her father died. There's a bond there, and the Vietnamese recognize that, as odd as it is. And he stayed with his family for about a week and came back to home. And then even went back again a couple times to see her. And this is a young girl who could have been his daughter. You know, it's an odd thing. The whole thing was crazy. So one would expect anyone to become crazy. In these situations. You know, and a lot of the Vietnamese people, well, my daughter was a Vietnamese linguist for the Air Force. She was CLI, top secret, and she went to Vietnam twice. One of the teachers in her CLI school killed herself. All the teachers were Vietnamese because she still had never overcome the PTSD she had from the Vietnam War. It won't go away, Alex. I don't think it's supposed to.
I think it's just one of the most powerful teaching moments in the world. I got reacquainted with the Ten Commandments. The first one, thou shalt not kill. Yeah, that's a big one. Remember that.
Yeah. Well, that was a killer for my husband. He was an altar boy on a Saturday, and 2 weeks later he was in uniform in the Marine Corps, and within a short period of time he was sent over to Vietnam. He had no idea where he was going. He had never heard of Vietnam before. And he was Catholic, and Cardinal Spellman came to visit his unit and absolve them of guilt for the things that they had to do. And he had caused the death of some Vietnamese at that point. And he told me, he said, you know, with the Cardinal there, I felt a lot better for about a week. He said, but you know what? That guilt came back with full force. He never got over it. And
there's survivor's guilt, the hardest part of that.
Guilt,
I know that when I was a kid, I can remember when I was about 13 or 14, my best friend's dad got shot down over there. His name was Captain Bill Purcell. He got shot down in an F-105 POW 5 years or something like that with McCain and those guys. And they had to pack up and move off base because he wasn't going to be there anymore or might not ever come back. And the whole thing was so sad, and it was just one right after another. By the time I graduated from high school, I could name 20, 25 guys that I went to school with who all had their fathers either dead or POWs in North Vietnam. In the gut. I mean, that's why when I signed up, my attitude is, you kill us, we'll come back tomorrow and we'll kill you right back.
Well, I understand that. You said something about lessons learned, or maybe I did. I graduated from military, I'm sure you know, in 2007, the American Military University. I was the only civilian there, and I graduated with honors. Oh, were they tough on me. My favorite professors, it was bad enough I was a female, but the only civilian in a Marine Corps-run school, he thought he could break me. He had no idea how, Vietnam's been part of my life since 1983, To me, he was a physician, but he was also a major. He had helped develop the OIF war plans. But to make a long story short, those lessons learned in Vietnam were part of a lot of the work I did for thesis work and, all sorts of things. I had to do play war games, do war plans. Those lessons learned are so important today. There's not a single veteran who died in Vietnam or who was disabled by Vietnam who did anything in vain, because what they did is still important. It's not important to these civilians out there who don't have a clue. And it's not important for a lot of these younger veterans and these high school kids. They're only going to see maybe a two-paragraph history lesson on Vietnam. It is important to the chiefs of staff of our, our military, and to our commanders, the people that control our military over there right now in Afghanistan and Iraq. They studied lessons learned from Vietnam.
Hey, the millennials are already sinking into this, or Generation Y, because I was in there in the emergency room on the 23rd of April, and the guy was saying, well, so what are your risk factors for having this heart failure? And I says, well, I don't know. Let's see, hepatitis C, but I'm cured of that. All these surgeries. I said, 2 years of Agent Orange and Agent Blue. And the guy looked at me with this 1,000-yard stare, and he was shaking his head and wrinkled his brow. And he says, Agent Orange, what's that?
Oh,
a 30-year-old.
Are you kidding? Is it ischemic heart disease at all?
He's 10 years. 10 years after the war. He's probably born what, about 85, maybe 95, 05, 50. Yeah, a little bit. Born about 85, 87. He's a doctor. He's never heard of Agent Orange. That's gradually going to fade away. All the presumptive diseases associated with hepatitis C are all going to die with us. And there's only about 850,000 of us guys that actually were on the physically boots on the ground left alive right now.
Boy. Wow.
But there's about Air America guys too, and they're getting in on this.
Boy.
I had to open that can of beans with Agent Orange and Agent Blue up in Laos and show my orders, and I had pictures of the drum sitting there on the side of the runway at Long Chien. And boy, I'll tell you what, the OGC shoveled me into a joint motion for E-Man to shut me up and give me all my money before we could talk about Laos.
I bet.
Old Bob says, well, yeah, we want to do oral. We want oral to talk about all the Agent Orange and Agent Blue in Laos. And 2 seconds later, before that thing even hit the ECF docket register, it registered their things. Okay, we'll give you everything you want.
Boy.
Shut up.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. And, you know, you never hear a veteran. I have never yet seen a disabled veteran who claimed any disability at all from Cambodia. I can't figure that out.
You know, I flew over it a few times between Bangkok because your flight path coming out of Tan Chanuk almost goes right over. Well, of course, it does go over, but you have to gain a little bit of altitude before you get there because about 1970, they started shooting at all those 130s that were pulling out of the Thompson Newton headed to Bangkok. They didn't have enough altitude by the time they crossed the border.
Boy, that's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, I never was on one that got shot at, but I do know the pilot that I talked with said, man, I'll tell you, you sit on your flak vest coming out of Thompson Newton if you're headed to Bangkok.
Boy.
Yeah. 15,000 feet, one of them 50 calibers or 37 millimeters can reach that without any problem at all.
Who's paying for those weapons?
Well, all those weapons are leftover Russian and Chinese knockoff stuff. And they're still using the same stuff 50 years later.
Boy.
Same caliber, same everything. I was looking for some tracers in 7.62 because I remember those little green footballs coming up to meet the aircraft a lot of times when they were shooting tracers at us. And the Russians are the only ones with the green stuff. We had orange-colored stuff. They had some other things called smoke rounds. It left a little white trail of smoke coming up to you.
Yeah.
And you could see that.
I thought I've heard veterans described green tracers in Vietnam.
Yeah, same exact stuff. I found some, and it must be about 50 years old, too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Gosh.
It's in the old steel casings, not even in brass.
Gerald,
I wanted to tell Gerald I've been just sitting here itching to... Gerald started talking to me the other day about IMOs. He had a handful of IMOs and IMEs. I said, well, now, wait a minute, Gerald. You realize there's two different subjects. IMO is something you get from Dr. Bash, and IME is something that a veterans law judge gets from what they used to call an independent VA doctor opinion. And
he didn't
believe me. I can show it to you in a bunch of different decisions.
Yeah, I was always under the understanding that an IME was an independent medical examination. And an IMO was an independent medical opinion. They put hands on and actually examine you, and the other one's where they look at your records, medical records, and make an opinion. But way Alex explained it, I was certainly wrong. I'm glad he corrected me because...
Well, I see it on it all the time, and I don't think people understand it. Two entirely different concepts.
I think
an IMO would be
Dr.
Bash flying into Oklahoma, and you meeting him at the airport, and y'all finding a motel room or something where he can put you out on a bed and do your range of motion with a goniometer and do all that stuff and then pay him and he'd write you up in an opinion and then you'd give him your copy of all your contemporary medical records from the service, your actual medical STRs, And he'd use that, and he'd do everything else, and he'd examine you, he'd talk to you, he'd take, ask you a whole bunch of questions, and he'd go home, and he'd write himself up an IMO, and he'd hand it to you, and you'd give him some money. That's an IMO.
No, 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 that's an IME.
No, it isn't.
That is an
IMO.
Based on the medical terminology, Dr.
Bash
says IMOs on medical records. When he comes and does an examination, it becomes an independent medical examination. And the way it's written up is completely different.
The VA, the Veterans Administration, who writes these things and calls these things IMEs and IMOs, has, if you read 1,000, and I've read 10,000 or 100,000 BVA decisions, you'll see it written up exactly like this. The veteran arrived, and his doctor said this, that, and the other thing twice. And his independent medical opinion was that the blah, blah, blah was caused by X disease or jumping out of airplanes, and the VA examiner said, not so fast, it's 50% or less, that it was caused by that, and we don't agree with that. So the VA veterans law judge up there at the Board of Veterans Appeals says, no, both of these IMOs are defective because somebody didn't analyze or take into account that you jumped out of airplanes. The VA guy didn't say that, and then the doctor he hired to do his IMO didn't say that, well, yeah, he did a whole bunch of civilian parachuting after work, and he didn't discuss whether he maybe injured himself after being in the service or the 82nd Airborne. That veterans law judge says, I'm remanding this for an independent medical evaluation, not examination. Evaluation. It does not involve the veteran being there for a C&P. They just bundle up two of those IMOs, the VA examiner's IMO and the veteran's IMO, and they send it to a VA independent doctor that they VA hires. But every time they do this, they go find a guy that works at a VAMC.
Right.
So he ain't very independent in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
but the
baseline.
IME will state right there, it says we're going to do an independent medical evaluation. And the doctor read all the evidence in the C-file, and he read everybody's opinion, and it's his independent medical evaluation that veteran is 49.999% not service-connected because it's least likely – not at least as likely as not that it was caused by the service, so he goes home with empty pockets. That's what an IME is. That's what the VA calls an IME. It's a rebuttal to a veteran's private IMO is what it is. It's VA's way of denying your IMO.
It's the examination evaluation. They compare. They've got a board at the group. It's like the old medical board. Remember the old medical board?
Yeah, but these guys will never set eyes on you when the VA doctor who's doing this IME reads paper. He does it, and he looks at x-rays. He looks at goniometer measurements. He looks at this. He looks at that. But mostly he looks at that little checkbox where it says not service-connected. And that's about as far as this whole – it's a dog and pony show anyway. He's going to lose. But that's what it is, an independent medical evaluation of all the evidence. That's what an IME is, and about 99% of them are not in your favor, and they're not your friend. And that's the difference between an IMO and an IME. In VA's eyes, you know,
The VA's a little different.
Describe it or something. Well, I'm going to give you an IME, and I'm going to write up an IMO. He's welcome to say whatever he wants to in terms of terminology, but I'm going by the strict definition of if you write IME someplace and something you send to the VA, they're going to be scouring your record for some veterans law judge that sent something out for an independent medical evaluation. They're not going to be looking for a nexus letter from you.
So what we're doing here is getting an independent evaluation crosswise with an independent medical
examination.
And
but the
there are two different animals.
Evaluation of evidence, because there's never ever been an IME in VA history where a veteran attended a new C&P in order for the guy to write the IME. It never happens that way. It's, you've had all the C&Ps you're going to have when the Veterans Law Judge sends it out, an IME. It's just going to go sideways, and it's going to come right back to them like a boomerang. It's not going to be remanded back to the regional office below from where you live, a new C&P, a new opinion, and then maybe for them to write another SOC or SSOC and then send it back to the court or to the Board of Veterans Appeals. This occurs at the appellate level without going back to the regional office, and that's why an IME is so different from an IMO. You have all the IMOs you're ever going to have by the time you get to the Board of Veterans Appeals, unless you send one in at the last minute in that little 60-day window. But all the IMOs are accomplished at what we call the Agency of Original Jurisdiction, your regional office, your VARO, your O, or whatever. That's where the IMOs occur. And if the VA chooses to deny, even if you have a really top-notch IMO, when you get to the Board of Veterans Appeals, you can induce the Veterans Law Judge to, and ask him for an IME. But, as I said, that's the difference of the two terms. You'll never see an IMO. You'll never see a Veterans Law Judge send out your claim for an IMO.
Yeah, but 99% of the time, your IMO that you have is done by a certified specialist, and you're up against their opinion from a nurse practitioner, so you shouldn't have a problem there.
Well, you know, that's the other thing that Gerald and I were talking about the other day when we decided to go ahead and do the show, was he was talking about DBQs, and I got an interesting story because I happened to watch the tape on it. But back when old Representative Filner, and I'm sure John remembers him.
Oh, hands-on Bob.
Became the mayor of San Diego anyway. He was questioning Undersecretary for Benefits Allison Hickey. It was back about 2011, 2012 there, just cranking up the VBMS and the whole idea of a fully developed claim. And they're talking about the DBQs. There was already guys were from AMLEG and VFW, DAV, they're all going, yeah, but there ain't no nexus box on here where you can write it's more likely or less likely or a box you can check off on all that stuff. And Allison looks old Filner right square in the eye with that perfect smile and them pearly white teeth and that blonde hair. She says, well, Bob, this is how it works. We got a whole bunch of them forms printed up. We still got about 1.5 million of them. As soon as them run out, well, we're going to start putting the new ones, and it'll have them. It'll have them. Well, nobody even blinked an eye, but it's an electronic form. Come on. 1.5 million in hard copy? Come on. What are you mentioning? You know,
I still haven't seen the
electronic form. You could do that overnight. You know, the night crew could rewrite the software for that one. Box 31. It's A, less likely as not, B, as likely as not, more likely than not, more likely than less likely.
Remember,
to service. We got to use up all them electronic forms. We got
to
mess
up. Oh, yeah, but the reason being, in order to change the form to add the box to it, then they have to go into the master, and they have to change the master, and they have to get permission to do it, and they got to record it. It's all quality control, and they don't want to do it, and they have to get so many people involved to do the change, and it's got to be recorded, and it's got to be published. Yeah,
that was 4 years ago,
pain,
John.
But
they could probably swing it in that short a period of time.
Oh, I'm sure they can, but I mean, I've seen every DBQ form going. I have yet to see an opinion section on the DBQ form.
Well, that's why when I do all my filings or help, let me rephrase that. Every time I talk to them how they should put their filings in, I always tell them, make sure, see attachment A, see attachment B, social security numbers on everything, initial them at the top and initial them at the bottom so they can't add anything in.
Yeah.
You have to assume these guys
proud of you.
And number the sheets. I swear to God, it sticks out like a sore thumb when you get to the Court of Veterans Appeals where you say, well, here's my nod, Your Honor, and pages 4 through 9 are missing. So how can you tell? Well, they're numbered. VA's pretty dumb, you know. They don't think anybody's going to notice that kind of stuff. Well, anyway, that I just wanted to make sure everybody understands that there is a very, very real difference between an IMO and an IME. And if you use a term like IME, you're going to throw them off at the, up there at the regional office and further up the line, because they're going to be running around looking for some kind of BVA decision that had an IME in it. And they won't find one if you haven't got there on appeal yet. And I prefer using that IMO moniker, but spelling it all out for them, because VA has taken everything I've ever given them in a way, shape, or form of a claim and changed it, remodeled it, changed everything I said and said, didn't said things that I didn't say and didn't say things that I did say. So I put everything, you know, like, what does Bob call it, end tables on the furniture or something. He's got a term for it where you put everything in quotes so they can't slide out of it. But VA, they're slippery, and the higher you go up, the slipperier they get in my book. The guys at the regional office, they're kind of like the cats in gym or kids. They couldn't put two and two together and come up with four on any given day, and that's why we lose there. But, of course, it's just built in that we're going to lose. 85% of us do. If only 22% win at the BVA, there's still something wrong with it. When you go up to the Court of Veterans Appeals and 67 come back in your favor, that's pretty powerful statistics for anybody. I'm surprised the Court of Veterans Appeals doesn't have a backlog right out the front door all the way down to the Washington Monument yet.
It's coming.
Man. It's coming. Yeah, you're sitting there watching that python. It already went through the regional offices. Now it's up there at the BVA. Pretty soon it's going to have to go through the CAVC before the boa constrictor takes a dump and out all those decisions. I think we ought to let 3M or Xerox or somebody just take over all the backlog at the BVA, hire attorneys. And when you're done, the backlog's gone, you know, hey, fine, see you later. You're terminated. There goes your medical. Bye. Thank you.
Well, you know when you file, it goes into a pile.
Well, I know, but if you had enough judges, and the last time I talked with my buddy that works up there, he's a veterans law judge, and I'm not even going to tell you his name, but he's a real nice guy. And told me, he says, there's 79 judges now. And the funny thing is, it'll really, really roll your socks down. You remember back about a year and a half ago, Laura Eskenazi, she's the deputy administrator up there in charge of the BVA. She says, okay, we're going to take all them staff attorneys and make them into temporary acting veterans law judges for 90 days, and we'll get rid of the backlog that way. Well, every time you take a staff attorney away from a veterans law judge, making him do more work, and all of a sudden his output goes down. The net gain of stealing 90 or 100 staff attorneys and making them judges for a month put VA back further behind the eight ball if they'd just been working and doing their 1.1 claims per day for the veterans law judges where they were assigned. And it got them into even more trouble and more backlog than they were before. And my friend said, yeah, they threw that stuff in the trash can. They went right back to us, forcing us, putting a gun to our head and said, I want to see 1.1 decisions every day. And, you know, if you could crank out two, you get a bonus. So that's where they're at right now. 79 judges, he told me, as of last email I got from him was about a month ago. 79 judges. You rounded up to 80. One case per day, 5 days a week, times 80 times one. That's 80 decisions. Maybe it's 84 if you add up all the point ones. But the bottom line is that you can't dig out from 60,000 claims backlog if you're only cranking out 44,000 a year. I don't care how good a mathematician you are, you can't change that dynamic. That's taking one step forward and sliding back two. That's what the VA's saddled with now. What did they think was going to happen when they sped up all the claims going through the regional offices? Where did they think they were all going to end up? The planning involved in that, well, it's VA planning. We already know what that's all about. I guess we don't even have to waste our time thinking about it.
Yeah, it's the same. Any disability system is the same. Government run especially doesn't matter.
Well, Gerald, I think he's going to grab him by the you-know-who's with that spoilation thing. It's they fought that tooth and nail ever since Dayton. I know Bronco Vet was telling me, he says he got in on that shredding scandal where they gave him that dispensation that says, you know, well, maybe we hamburgered some of your records. Maybe we didn't. We're not going to say whether we did or not, but it happened during that period of time that the OIG caught him with a big stack of stuff in the shredder room that didn't belong there.
But well, I know one thing. They sure got my claims folder messed up and messing all kinds of data because when Bob and I were up there, Lawyer Bob, I submitted doctors, IMOs, we'll call them. Of course, at the time, I was calling them IMEs because I had some doctors that give me examinations. I didn't realize I was probably talking outside of my mouth. But the lady there, the DRO, she indicated she had never seen some of that stuff and said, I didn't see this in your claims folder. And we made it quite clear to her that the claims folder had been spoliated. And Bob Walsh says, I have advised Mr. Cook to contact the FBI and that we take this matter to federal court because that's a violation of Privacy Act. And also had other veterans' award letters in my claim folder. I had all their information, phone numbers, Social Security numbers, and addresses, full name, everything. And
well, don't feel pregnant alone. You should have seen my C file. They had all kinds of stuff in it. For all the way back to 89 and 90, they were jamming in.
Oh,
some other guy that was almost right after me alphabetically was in my file.
They say, let's just stuff some stuff in here. The guy probably can't read anyway. Send it to you.
You know, your stuff is in somebody else's file. That's where it
is.
Well,
yes, sir.
It isn't in your file.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Well, it's bad because she said, I said, you know, and then she goes to talking about DBQs, and I said, wait a minute, you want to discuss DBQs? And here I'm sitting with a bunch of IMOs. I said, in my opinion, the DBQs are worthless anyway. And I said, an independent medical opinion has got to outweigh a DBQ. They're just check the box and put a date in. And these DBQs, I'm sure veterans are going to find in the future, is going to come back and bite them hard.
Well, think about it like this, Gerald. Ever since the war, 1812 or 1945 or World War II or whatever, the basic tenet of the three things that we need to prove our claim, injury in service or risk factor or whatever, injury now that's same or similar to it, and the note, the IMO, the nexus letter from the doctor that ties the two events together. That's what I used to call the Kaluza triangle, the shedding elements, the Hickson principle. It's all one the same project. But a DBQ, all that is a snapshot of you today on June 3rd or June 2nd or whatever it is of 2016. It doesn't discuss what was happening in 1965. It doesn't discuss how 1965 relates to 2016. All it is physical examination of your body as of today on one tenet, one facet, like Parkinson's disease or hepatitis C or a neuropathy issue of some kind. It doesn't look at any other symptom or set of symptoms that might be related, that could correlate with it, where you take all three symptoms, add them together, and say, oh, well, then we shouldn't be using this DBQ. We should be using the Parkinson's DBQ or the TBI DBQ or the PTSD DBQ. We shouldn't be using the one for personality disorders. As a DBQ doesn't do anything other than tell you how you are today. It has no use as an adjudication tool. It's a medical tool to rate you by. That's all a DBQ could be used for. There's nothing in a DBQ that says, and it happened in 1968 when my main chute didn't deploy and my reserve was kind of a streamer when I hit the field.
Well, you know, Alex, I come home here because I never did like DBQs ever since I first heard of them. I know a lot of people claim they like them. But I got to looking up here on DBQs. Now, here's something because they said be sure to have the doctor, if you have him fill out a DBQ, a statement attached to it showing more likely than not.
That's right.
But
the nexus letter. That is the IMO right then and there. It's not part of the DBQ. It's just a physical examination. It's a CSP.
Well, here's what the Department of Veteran Affairs say. The question is, should providers discuss the complete DBQ findings with the veteran? And the answer is, the providers are the most qualified to discuss the veteran's health, but cannot and should not offer any opinion to the outcome of the Disability Benefits Claim, BBA.
Okay, now,
nor
now let me,
the
let me
provider
put that
make the decision on the veteran's disability claim. The provider should remind the veteran that the examination and DBQ report are only one part of the total evidence reviewed by the BBA in making a disability benefit decision. So they're not supposed to make an opinion.
Right. I understand that.
It's unacceptable.
That,
they'll throw in the trash.
When you said that you took that DBQ to your doctors and handed it to them, said, would you guys fill this out? They looked at this thing and they said, are you kidding me? And they got about three questions into it. They said, screw that. Went to the end and signed it. But they never, ever finished
that's
it.
That's exactly what they did. And
this is bogus. What purpose does it serve for me to fill it out? I'm not going to do it. Doctors are a proud bunch of guys. But
the DBQs are designed for your primary care team to fill out, according to what I've read.
If you go into your VA doctor and hand him that DBQ, he will fill it out. But he is precluded by law since I think it was about April of 2010, Veterans Benefits Administration came down hard on the Veterans Health Administration and said, quit giving vets nexus letters. Quit writing IMOs for the veterans. And that was the end of that. So you hand them a DBQ, you get a DBQ filled out, and it tells you exactly how disabled you are as of today. That's all it's useful for. It's like having a C and P exam is all it is, but with nobody making a decision about whether you're service-connected or whether it's even related to service.
I just had a C and P exam, and he said, all this is a DBQ, and he went check box, check box, check box, yes, no. And, you tell him yes, he'd say, oh, you said no. I said no. I said yes, and they put down what they want. Then when I read my statement of case, I realize he changed it around the way he wanted, and
that's
not only
why
that,
you don't. Don't waste your time on a DBQ. Fill out your own, get your doctor to provide his nexus letter, whether it's Dr. Bash or Dr. Ellis or whoever you hire, whether you've got your own personal care physician in the private sector, have him write the whole nexus letter out. Don't give him a DBQ. That's an insult to him.
I agree. That's my personal opinion. Now, people do what they want out there.
Doctor will say he's got a F2 hurricane situation going on in his hands and this, and they could peel all that stuff up and stick it in their own DBQ, and they could probably do it for the C and P that you're going to attend anyway.
Supplemental statement of case, and not only that, the DBQ, the idiot that fills out the DBQ is not the one that he turns it over to some physician or a computer does it. I don't know. They probably got 10 different negative scenarios for every damn question, and so they just hit it, and the computer takes care of the rest, and it comes out position so-and-so, said this, said that, and you never even seen a position.
But the only thing I can see a DBQ would be used for is if, on the offbeat chance you did win, stick the DBQ into the magic computer, and the computer would read it, and it would spit it out, and it would give him 30% because he has this, this, and this, but he doesn't have this, this, and this, and he didn't check off boxes this, this, and this on the DBQ. Therefore, he doesn't get 50%. That's all it can be used for. That's all it could possibly ever be dreamed up to be used for.
That's right. It's a negative instrument for a veteran.
Well,
it's not negative, but it does
it discuss how you got injured. It just discusses how injured you are right now, not 5 years ago, not 10 years ago, not 50 years ago. It's today. But how does that aid in making a decision about whether it's service connected? It doesn't. You can't make that leap.
And something else it does. It wants to know the dates you first went to the doctors on with this problem.
Exactly.
Now, if you had filed your claim back in 2000, but you never went to a doctor till 1999 or whatever, and then the VA does, they jack around with you for another 4 or 5 years before you can get any kind of diagnosis. They said, well, according to this, we never started treating you for hypertension till 2010.
Well,
what they're going to do here, I see this coming. They're pretty lax right at the moment, possibly, but this is a coming. They're going to go from the date of the diagnosis instead of the date of when you first file your claim, and that's going to really put the hurting on a lot of veterans.
But if you have a nexus letter from your doctor and it says...
Well, that can make a difference, yes.
High blood pressure... in 1992, and you file for it in 2014, 2014 is your effective date. not 2016 when they finally got around to doing a CNP, but I'll give you three guesses what VA always chooses and fights you for 2 years, and that is that two-year difference in when they give you your effective date.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's I think they're probably doing a little of that now.
Of course.
But they're going to get rougher on it. They're going to get more strict.
I can see a disaster coming
with these DBQs.
You know what they're going to do with sleep apnea? They're going to say, okay, we're taking away that 50%, and we're going to give you an operation that's going to clear up that problem back in the back. And if you decline the operation, which will cure your sleep apnea, then you lose your rating.
You opt out,
If you get the surgery done after 6 months of 100% or whatever they're going to give you for that, then you're probably still going to drop back to about 10% or something like that because you're no longer entitled to 50%. You don't need the CPAP. You don't need – they're going to get you either way. But the bottom line is the easiest one is just point a gun at your head and say it's surgery or 0%, Jack.
That's about what it's coming to.
Mm-hmm. Of course it is.
But there again, that's my personal opinion on these DBQs. I'm not telling someone not to go get them filled out if they can get them filled out. If that's what they want to do, more power to them, and I hope they get them filled out. But
it's not going to make any difference on your claim unless you got a leg blown off. Unless you got a... You've lost one eye because you didn't throw the hand grenade far enough, and you had a little blowback and got cut some of what you was throwing. But you know the bottom line is that's a SMCK or whatever loss of use of an eye. There's probably some percentage involved in that. But if you don't fill out the DBQ and say I'm blind in one eye, then yeah, it's probably going to take you a little bit longer to get service connected. But that DBQ in and of itself is not going to be the determinant, except in those obvious cases where you go in, you're missing a leg, you got your Purple Heart in one hand, your combat infantryman badge in the other one. Well, those guys always win. I mean, that's a no-brainer. But for the you and the me's in life who don't have everything, all their ducks in a row, they're going to get denied and denied and denied before they win. But they're just delaying the inevitable. They know you're going to win. You know you're going to win. But it's an incremental game. You don't have enough money to just say, okay, Mr. Graham, here you go. You really do get 100%. Here's your money. They're going to play this game. Here's 20. Well, I'm going to file a not. Okay, well, then we'll give you 40. Well, I'm going to file my Form 9. Okay, well, we'll give you 60. Here's my Form 9, and here's my new MO. Well, I'm sorry. It up to appeal. That'll take 4 years, and then you get 100%, and it'll come back to us, and we'll give you 100%. And they'll hold you up for 6-7 years to getting your 100%, but you're going to get it. They're just going to make you wait.
Well, they
if you
they're
live
pretty
long enough.
Slick, and they're always changing.
I got 29 years underneath my belt. I'm pretty familiar with this program. I listed some of those guys' belly aching on head. It's a little... God, I've been doing this on the weight since 2009. That's when I filed my Form 9. I said, oh, shit. You ain't even got any grass growing underneath it yet.
Yeah.
That's only 6 years old. What are you talking about?
But I'm
probably
going to
get that thing certified here just for too long. Sit tight.
But I wanted to bring something up that I've become aware of at this DRO hearing, and I'd like to put a bug out to the people, word out. The instant you go in and sit down, you're looking at the DRO, Division Review Officer, whatever they're called, you look at them and you ask them, the first question should be out of your mouth or out of your attorney's mouth, is has there been any communication written or otherwise come out of this office, coming to me or my attorney, in the last 7 or 8 days. Because we went through a DRO hearing. As soon as we get home, Lawyer Bob found one, and then I found one, a supplemental statement of case.
Jesus.
And it was mailed. Our DRO hearing was the 26th. This was mailed the 23rd. So, therefore, we had no chance of receiving it until we returned home. Here we're sitting in this meeting staring at a smug DRO officer, and that is horrible. But she had already written a supplemental statement of case, and here she's sitting here just by chance, we had addressed with documentation most of the items that was in her supplemental statement of case, because we went medical against medical, and that covered a lot of ground. But another question, after each individual, like a doctor's statement or whatever, IMO, you submit, ask them right then before you move on to the next piece of evidence, ask them if they have any disagreements with what you've submitted. Do they believe it? Is it logical? You know, do they have any issues with it? You should ask them after each individual document you give them, I think. That's what I'm going to do next time. Anyway, that way if there's an issue with this, you're not going to wait 6 months down the road. If there's an issue, they should tell you if you ask them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
I mean, I got home and I said, why didn't I do that? I did ask at the end of the meeting, do you have any issues, questions, or comments? Oh, no. Well,
something
I should have asked in between each individual document, because I was pushing doctors' IMOs over.
Yeah.
And we went through quite a few that they claimed they hadn't seen, which I don't believe, but I think they just see what they want. But I should have asked in between each one. That way, should it ever come back, we could have used that data against them.
Well, think about this, first of all, Gerald. If you're finding these SSOCs in your file on this thing, why in Sam Hill are you having a DRO hearing? You've just gone backwards 4 years in time.
Well, Bob and I went through that. Originally, we were supposed to have a panel, I think, of three judges, was my understanding.
One judge or three. You can't ever have 2, 4, 6. It has to be an odd number. So that you can never, ever have two judges be opposed to one another, one of them ruling in your favor and one against you. You have to have a tiebreaker.
Well, we get there and find out their computers were down, their powers had been off, and Bob says, look, we're here now. They was wanting to put us off.
Oh, yeah.
We're here now. Let's get a tape recorder out and do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did.
But they
had a DRO officer instead of a judge.
You could have had a panel of judges and a tape recorder, not a DRO and a tape recorder.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're right. That's not the case.
The way the rules on this read, John, it's real. I mean, Gerald, it's real cut and dried. Do you file your notice of disagreement right when you file that? You file and say, I want a DRO review. Or they'll call you back or write you a letter back that says, Roger, we got your nod. review, and you go, yes, I do. So then they put you in the slot for that, and they say, well, do you want a DRO hearing? And you say, yeah, and they put you in the slot for that. And the judge will do the hearing, the DRO will do the hearing, and then 16 months later you get off his dead ass and write your SOC up and tell you you lose.
Yeah.
You'd file your Form 9, and at that stage of the game, they'd certify your claim. But when you get that SSOC, you can always write them a letter back and say, I disagree with your SSOC. Here's some new and material evidence on my claim, and here's a new, let's say, a new IMO, and you hand it to them, and they look at it. And then they still deny again. Then they issue an SSOC, still denying you. And if you don't answer that SSOC in 30 days, it's like a pumpkin. The carriage and the horses turn into a pumpkin and mice. And
yeah.
They put the Form 8, and off it goes to the Veterans Administration law judge in D.C. But
well,
if you're looking at SSOCs in your C file and you're talking to a DRO, you see the problem. You should be talking to the Veterans Law Judge. You shouldn't be having a DRO hearing. That doesn't compute. You can't go backwards from those C.
Well, I sure am. I've been plumbed to the top, Alex, and then
well,
they brought
me back
down the
ladder. He's back to the CBA remand.
Lawyer Bob says, what are these people doing? They don't want this thing going back up the ladder. But, well, I laugh about it. It's really not funny. But this is the craziest thing. He said in 35 years he never seen a deal
well,
like
exactly
this.
Right. And the problem here is that this is why the VSOs don't want attorneys involved in this. Rather,
that's
keep...
exactly right. And,
because... Attorney walks in and says, what the, excuse me, pardon my French, but what kind of fuster cluck is this here? You got an SSOC in the file and you're just now getting around to a DRO hearing? Isn't that getting way out in front of the horse somewhere here? This thing's at the Board of Veterans Appeals, not in St. Louis. We're just sitting here in St. Louis so we can talk to them fellas, the judges.
Hell yeah, we did.
That's like a bait and switch.
For future reference, Alex, the term we need to use from now on is Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Sorry, I'll
Tango what? Yeah, I got you there.
Not to my computer screen before I come back on the show.
When Gerald first told me that, I asked him what he was going to do, and he gave me the information, and he said something about DRO, and I said, DR what?
Yeah. Yeah, we done been up the ladder and back down. Bob, lawyer Bob said, I ain't never seen nothing like this.
Well,
he
now
said,
he's lying.
I ain't about to let this go back up the ladder. How many times I've been remanded by judges and everything else?
Remember last year when I filed that extraordinary writ with Bob?
Writ.
I filed it, and he helped me file it, but I actually did it myself. He just had Heather kind of ghostwrite all the paperwork for it.
Yeah.
His words. I got an SOC finally from those jerkwads down there in Seattle, finally after 3-4 years of waiting for a decision. Not a denial, but an actual SOC. They jumped from not doing denials and went right into SOC. So I said, okay, here, I'm going to file my Form 9 again. And Bob suggested we do that just in case they laughed and said we'd never filed one. But they gave me an SOC from a Form 9. And we filed that writ, and they jumped in and did another thing where they gave me everything except for 100% on porphyria, so they wrote another SOC and sent it up to the Board of Veterans Appeals. So, I mean, they can pretty much do whatever they want to do. They can go backwards in time. They got DeLoreans too, you know. Them time machines, they can hedge hop around and do SSOCs and then jump in there and do DROs. I don't know what they think they're doing anymore.
I don't know. I can't explain it, Alex. It's beyond me. This is quite a deal.
There was a bunch of guys coming on to had it, and we were sending them out to Bob. Call Bob or call Allison. Remember back then, back in early or late 2015? Well, they'd be sitting there holding an SOC in their hand. I've already filed a Form 9. Call up Allison, and a week later they get their award. What happened to the BVA? I mean, they just jumped ship, pulled the thing back, ripped up the Form 9 and issued a rating? How does that work?
Well, the regional offices are not constant across the country. Each regional office operates differently, and they have evidently their own set of rules. There's nothing constant about the VA other than the fact that if they have an opportunity, they're going to jack you around.
They're
going to
screw it up.
Yeah. Some places are worse than others. Some places you get the right people looking at your claims folder. You do have a chance of winning. But other places, I don't care what kind of evidence you got, they're going to jack you around. And, you know, there's always a negative argument to any side of something. So,
I don't know. I think Seattle's it wins it hands down. I mean, look what they did to me for 29 years, and finally it took an extraordinary writ to sort of semi-straighten it out.
Well,
But their VR&E office now, they've been denying me my greenhouse for 5.5 years. They got the award. We're going on 9 months. I still don't see anything out there.
It
ain't indoors.
It's growing in it.
Well, the rhubarb's looking good. And the
sugar
snap
piece. I'd like to have some green tomatoes to fry up, but I ain't getting them, I guess. But,
anyway, I just don't understand how they've gotten to this point where it used to be you file, you get denied, you file your NOD, then they came out with the DROs, but they always had a DRO kind of review. I had one in 1990 before they called it that. Hey, is that a senior rating representative? Listen to your bitch. That's all it was. It just meant GS-12 heard what you were complaining about instead of a GS-7. And he just gave you a real super sweet denial instead of the regular denial. But how can they hedge hop around and jump from a Form 9 back to an SSOC? It can't be done.
Well, they can do it. They did it on me.
It was.
Well. How can you issue two SOCs without having an SSOC? I mean, the moment you issue the second one, it's a supplemental statement. It's not an SOC anymore. That's what they did to me.
That was the last one we got when we got home was SSOC. Evidently, they can put them out pretty regularly. Seemed like I'd see a lot of them. But,
at least I'd be crying foul, Gerald.
Oh, I think we're going to cry, pal. You don't know what's coming. Bob said he's going to do it.
I think Gerald's got this thing in the bag. I think that they're going to realize this thing is so screwed up. This is way past Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. They'll just say, well, you know what? It's easier to sort this thing out by just giving old Gerald equitable relief here.
Yeah, they got to give me something.
Up this C-file and just saying that it says whatever Gerald says it says, and then we'll just work. Now we'll give him 100%, but he's only going to get 100% for about last week.
They won yesterday. We'll start yesterday.
They've already made exposure.
Last week.
They've already made exposure.
Yeah.
He's already got Parkinson's and he's got ischemic heart disease, so they're going to get busy.
I don't beat anything I ever seen. I don't know. I've upset somebody somewhere. I don't see how I could have. I'm such a nice person.
You take all your heart medication. Don't do anything strenuous because you know they're gonna still gonna try to wait you out on this thing.
Oh,
thank God
I know they're waiting hard.
Imagine if you had the DAV representative, you'd probably have five SSOCs by now.
Oh my God! Don't talk to me. Yeah, the gal. You know, I got stabbed when I was in the service, and Lawyer Bob showed her my. That pulled it out. It wasn't in my records, but showed it to her where they had this big court martial thing and sent the guy to prison. But she said, "Well, here's your stressor letter." I said, "Yeah." I said, "I've been stressored, darling." I said, "Can you pay me now?" And she said, "No."
We gotta time for about another 6 years, Gerald.
Yeah. She said, "No." "But we can do a DBQ." I said,
"Oh, Lordy." Yeah, well, you know what? If DBQs came on softer paper, I could see a use for them.
I don't know. It could ought to come on toilet paper. That's the only good I can see them for.
Yeah, with a picture of Obama on the back of it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't say that, John.
I didn't hear it.
Lord, keep your arm around my shoulder and your hand over my mouth.
Yeah.
No, you're fine. I don't think we have a rating on this show anyway.
I said, "I got a good scar. You want to see it?" She said, "You do?" And I said, "Yeah, it's right down there." Right. And I said, "I'll drop my britches and show it to you, but I warn you now, I ain't got no underpants."
Oh, Missouri God. Fellas like that.
Bob's eyes just bugged. And I'm
he's heading door to door.
I bet he thought I was the craziest fool he'd ever run into. But you can't sit there every now trying to get a little humor in. My God, them are sick people. They're in them regional offices.
Well, I'm going to have to go feed my horses now. I think it's 5:30 already here.
That's it. But the show is rated PG for pretty good, so.
Yeah, we try to keep it civil here.
Well, I promise. I'm going to go have a sign made for your screen here.
Yeah.
I apologize especially to the readership and the audience. I'm not one to take the VA's name in vain, and you guys know me better than that.
Yeah, well.
And you're not even a sailor, Alex.
Yeah, you should have been in the Navy. Yeah, me too.
You know, those guys in the Air Force, you never hear an Air Force guy start swearing until we run out of ice cubes.
Yeah.
Your warm drinks,
that's
you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you think
that's
good? You'll
cold.
You'll see
you know
how
innovative we were. John, you got to realize this. We'd take gin and quinine pills. We'd crush up the quinine pills to make that quinine taste. And then we'd take a club soda, if anybody had bottles of that, and pour that all together. And that was a gin and tonic. And plus, it was a great malaria cure, too.
Well, that's a good deal.
Quinine time. I don't know. If you've ever seen a submarine run out of coffee, you'd know.
That would be ugly.
I'll be around to turn around and go back to port.
Yeah.
I've seen them. I've heard of them flying helicopters with coffee to them or planes and dropping it to them.
Oh, my God. In combat, you have to, for certain provisions, you have to allot for. You know, I understand that. But, you know, running out of ice that's or having a generator break down to where the refrigerator couldn't make ice cubes. That was combat.
That was horrible.
That was right, you know, because we make jokes about that. War is hell. There's no doubt about it. But combat is something entirely different. It's far more severe. At least the Air Force version of it is.
Combat is too much. Well, Drew, buddy, we're done, but we're out of time.
All righty.
We're totally out of time.
PG, I'm going to remember that one.
Folks, be sure to go to Haddit. You got any questions about the VA or about your claim? And be sure to, you know, they got a donate button there. If you feel up to it, got a little extra change in your pocket, hit that donate button and throw Haddit a little bit, kind of help them out, keep this show going. We've been working on trying to prove our content. I hope everybody got to learn a little something today. There ain't no telling. If you didn't, you didn't write fast enough. Alex, I want to thank you for coming on.
Wouldn't miss it for anything.
Well, yeah, you would have missed the show, I think. And we thank Berta for coming on, bless her heart. She enlightened us quite a bit. And John, I thank you for being here. I don't know. I think we ought to put a little gold star by this show.
Ain't one on it. Yep.
Okay.
I'll go on the board, pin it with a gold star, put it on the board, pin it.
Okay.
Well, good luck with your underwater kitchen there, John. Well, next week or next couple of weeks, we'll do another show, and I'll be all in. Just make sure I get the right day.
Yeah, John, he's going to go to growing rice.
Yeah.
He's going to become a rice farmer.
And he gets some bananas.
Yeah.
Keep throwing that in your pockets there, you know, a half a banana and a handful of rice.
Oh, heck. I shouldn't have took that last water pill. It would give me the giggles.
Yep.
All righty, I'll yak at y'all later. Bye-bye.
Be careful, right. Alex. Have a good one.
All right.
This will be Gerald Cook with Jay Basser. We'll be signing off for now.
You've been listening to the Haddit.com Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by Haddit.com. All opinions expressed here are the opinions of the individuals appearing on the show and are not the opinions of Haddit.com or Blog Talk Radio. Tune in next time for another edition of Haddit.com Blog Talk Radio and the Ask Basser Show.